Welcome to Manager Tools. Hire slow, fire fast is wrong. Part two. Here we go. Today's cast answers these questions. What does hire slow, fire fast mean? What's wrong with it? What should I do? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
By registering for a free account on the Manager Tools website, you'll be officially joining the fold. We know you're out there. We have 2 million listens of our podcasts every month. Don't make this the only time we get to talk. If you want to hear more from us, more on how we can help you become a more effective manager and more productive professional, sign up now. More communication is better.
So, if you don't have standards at all level, if managers aren't getting trained on what it means to be a manager, if there aren't clear parameters set for managing people and for what performance standards minimums are and so on, in practice, any manager could fire anyone at almost any time for whatever frustration he or she is feeling. And in fact, many do. They ought to be beheaded. I've been meaning to write this next bit, Mike, for probably 10 years, and I just keep forgetting, or I just don't think I have the right moment, but now is the right moment. Many folks say, regarding the idea that a manager could fire somebody based on he or she is frustrated and so on, is that's a reasonable standard. And the reason why it's reasonable is because individuals can quit at a moment's notice, right? It's an at-will employment rule. I can quit anytime I want, so therefore the company can fire me anytime it wants.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, why should an organization have a similar recourse as the individual?
Yeah, same reason why a boss can't flirt with their directs. Yeah, yeah. And if a direct gets a little bit out of line, you know, they'll probably get away with it. It's like,
yeah, exactly. So to be clear, guys, the organization oughtn't have similar recourse because the hypothetical between an organization and an individual, the individual firing the organization or the organization firing the individual, imputes a false equality between the individual and the organization. If an individual chooses to leave your organization, she rejects the organization. The organization is not put at risk, mainly due to its size. If an organization rejects an individual, though, fires him or her, that individual is often put at risk. Therefore, the organization has a moral obligation to meet a higher standard regarding terminating someone's employment. Period. Full stop. Yes. At-will employment suggests to us that anyone can leave any employer at any time, and any employer can fire any employee for almost any reason. But that, guys, is only the legal standard. The law does not say what is best. That's why the quote, "the law is an ass." The law says what is unlawful. I mean, if you're really an ethical professional, and I know you don't last long listening to us prattling on here if you're not an ethical person. Professionals don't go around thinking, how can I barely meet the legal standard to determine what we're going to do? That's not how we think. What's more, any termination that happens fast has the risk of appearing intemperate or indiscriminate. That's not healthful or helpful to your remaining staff. A sudden firing is much more likely to appear arbitrary. In fact, one of the things I've counseled at least 100 managers on in the last 30 years is, you know, Mark, what do I do about the impact on my team when someone does something so egregious, physical altercation, harassment, sexual harassment, verbal harassment, theft, a violation of integrity? I'll never forget the friend of mine who was a bank president who didn't have his personal card and so used a bank credit card for his family. And the bank said, we have a zero tolerance policy. And so they had to fire a very successful bank president because if you say you have a zero tolerance policy, then that's what you have. And if that happens and managers say, gosh, what do I do? How do I talk to my team about it when I can't talk to my team about it? And I tell them, you don't. It's regrettable. And, you know, Bob doesn't work here anymore. And I'm not at liberty to say. It's one of the ways I'm going to respect Bob. If you have concerns about Bob, you can certainly talk to Bob, and I wish him well. and you have a relationship with Bob. Hopefully you have a relationship outside of his work cell and his work email, and you can reach out to him. And I'm obligated to respect his privacy. And trust me, guys, if you're worried about that, about confidentiality, don't worry. The story will get out. And if someone comes to you and says, I heard X about Bob, if the story's wrong, unless you've got somebody who keeps bringing you wrong stories playing a game of elimination, if the story's wrong, just say, you know what? That's not true, and it's impolite to have these kind of conversations. But if the story's right, you simply say, I can't comment. That's one way, politically, if you wish to communicate with somebody. That said, it depends on your relationship with Bob and all kinds of other factors as well. You know, arbitrary behaviors on the part of an entity, the organization, which controls other people's addiction to food, clothing, and shelter, is harmful to effectiveness. It's like walking around with a dead man's switch on a bomb on your belt. You're just not yourself. And you don't want to forget about it, right? You think, gosh, at any time, I could be gone for any reason. You spend so many of your clock cycles in your head thinking about that, you're not thinking about work, and you become less effective. Look, as a general rule, every employee sees any organizational behavior toward any other employee as a template or a possibility for themselves. And just to be clear, guys, if you think we're talking in generalizations there, remember, the manager is the organization for the employee. That's who you are. That's what role power is. You get to speak for the organization. That's why you can't tell off-color jokes. That's why you can't be rude or disrespectful, because when you do that, the company is being rude or disrespectful, because you get to speak for the company. So therefore, you are always speaking for the company. So hopefully we've made it clear. Firing fast, in addition to hiring slow, is misleading, and neither one of them are effective managerial behaviors.
Okay, so we know what not to do. So what should I do?
Yeah, so what an effective manager does is hire with deliberate speed and fire with professional respect. And you'll notice there's a mention about time in there on speed on the first part, but there's no mention of time on the second part, although you might infer that it's better to be slow if you're going to be professional and respectful about a termination. And that feeling in your head, that's your conscience. The juxtaposition with hiring and firing and fast to slow in the aphorism is clever, but it's misguided. Each process is important, and both processes are guided by completely different principles. So let's talk about hiring. We talked earlier about how long it takes managers to hire. By the way, if you want to write me, mahorseman@manager-tools.com or just managertools.com, and you want to tell me, hey, Mark, here's how long it took me recently, I'd love to hear that. We do an informal survey of anybody who writes in and tells us how long it takes. Don't try to impress me. Be realistic about it so that I can report back to everybody. Hey, here's what the audience who wrote in says. Not that it would be scientific, but that's okay. Let's ask a different question about how long it takes. How many work hours of actual work will it require from you and from your team, although some of that work will be in parallel, so happen at the same time, you don't just add it all together. How many work hours will it take for you to make the offer? How much actual work will it take? Not counting all the wait times due to process delays and logistics and other priorities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If you do the math and really think about you thinking about it, all the time you spend doing emails, not waiting for emails, but sending emails and so on, and getting replies and reading replies and then making decisions and so on, it's probably going to be about 20 hours at the very most. If you're really hungry for a candidate, you could do all of that in 1 week. You could say, you know what, to your spouse, you could say, I normally have a 50-hour week. This week's going to be a 70-hour week, but I'm going to get the hire that I've been waiting for, and that will take 3 to 5 hours off my weeks going forward. Yes, folks, please don't write to me and say, I just recommended you spend 70 hours a week at work. Don't do that. It's not nice.
It makes him feel bad.
I know, it does. I'm like, come on. look, we're not going to explicate everything you could do, you need to do to hire more quickly than that hire slow guidance. That'd take 200 podcasts, which we'll eventually deliver, we promise. And it's also an important part of the Effective Interviewer Conference, and it's the subject of my book, Effective Hiring Manager. But we can discuss it at a high level, though, and we can point you to an awful lot of podcasts that already exist, okay? We approach the challenge of hiring by rejecting the idea that length of process and quality of decision are in any way related, that therefore taking more time means a better hire. They don't. Thinking's flawed. That's totally flawed. Because most managers don't have a standardized process for hiring and then therefore associate mistakenly the steps they're taking with the quality of the hiring decision. We can hire fast if we build a standard process and we know what we're doing and we don't have to think about the process when we're listening to candidate answers. Every manager ought to know how to write a job description. And for those of you who are licensees who read these show notes, you'll see that how to write a job description is written in title case because there's a podcast for that. That'll help you create simple behavioral interview questions. Again, there's a cast for that. You could use our interview creation tool if you're a licensee and create the best interview, we argue, the best interview you'll ever give, or at least the questions for the best interview you'll ever give, in 45 minutes for any job in the world. Or you could create a quick and dirty interview, and there's a cast for that, by creating simple behavioral interview questions, and there's a cast for that too. You would also plan your phone screen interview. There's a cast for that. You would decide whom to bring in for a final round of interviews. Okay? You could learn about that at our Effective Interviewer Conference. You would have already structured your day of interviews because you're going to have not just you, but your directs interview candidates as well. You and some of your directs would conduct prepared interviews. Your directs don't have to worry about the quality of their questions, even if it's only their third interview. You're going to tell them what questions to ask because we compare every candidate for a specific job only to the job. So therefore, there's only a limited number of questions we need to ask. And we don't go with people's gut, that's for sure. The outcome of those interviews is, for the first time in the minds of the managers or individual contributors who are conducting the interviews, the outcome of those interviews is a hiring recommendation, not data which we're going to discuss later or send emails back and forth about the quality of a candidate. I hate to tell you guys, if you have people interviewing in order to, quote, gather data as opposed to make a hiring recommendation, if they feel no pressure to have to recommend yes or no, they will be less rigorous during the interview. Further, if they feel no pressure and then therefore they have a discussion afterwards, and the discussion is really where the hiring decision is made, the single biggest thing we've tracked that makes the most difference in hiring decision is who speaks first and who speaks loudest. And if that isn't a misogynistic, the loudest part anyway, misogynistic hiring approach, I don't know what is. So you're going to conduct prepared interviews. You're going to make hiring recommendations during your brief interview results capture meeting at the end of the day. One of my all-time favorite podcasts. You can find it at manager-tools.com or you can go to iTunes. All of this is known in the public domain and doable for any manager. And if we plan now, all the time that we would have spent worried about, stressing over, preparing to do stuff, and then delaying because we can't get it all done, or we don't know what to do, or we just don't want to make a decision right now because we said we'd do it this morning. We got shanghaied by something else at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. We're too tired to think about it. Oh, I'll do that tomorrow. Another day lost. We can take all that out of the hiring timeline. No, you can't take some of the steps out of HR, but you can sure get rid of all the waste that you inject. And full disclosure, I don't mean to point a finger. If it sounds like I'm pointing a finger, I'm not, because that finger ought to come right back on me when I think at the time I took for hiring. Because I didn't know any better, because I read somewhere that hiring slow and firing fast is good. And you can be deliberate in your decision while still moving quickly through an already determined process. Same thing on the other end of the spectrum when it comes to firing. Ethically, we have to behave with professional respect. Yeah, there are black and white exceptions, violence in the workplace, integrity issue. But even then, we can fire somebody immediately with professional respect because those violations that they engaged in and their implications are well enough communicated that they know what the results are for somebody who does things that are beyond the pale and considered a terminating offense. For standard terminations, for performance issues, we have an obligation, whether you like it or not, due to the asymmetry between the organization and the direct, to move carefully, to give our direct every opportunity to correct his performance, to give her enough time to get above the minimum standards for her role. Forget about the cost associated with replacing the person. We're going to have to pay the other person at a higher level, probably, thanks to the false title of salary compression. It's actually goodwill. We've got to be willing to give plenty of feedback. If you've been listening for a while, hopefully you know there's a lot of podcasts about feedback on manager-tools.com and on iTunes.
One or two. You have to search really hard.
I think there's 30 or 40. Okay. We want to give our direct every opportunity to correct some performance. Here's what our data show, guys. Everybody always wants to know when we start telling you, talk to your people sooner about smaller things. I tip my hat to Matt Bentliff here. Sooner and smaller, not larger and later. And 93% of the time when we give directs negative feedback, they correct their behavior after one instance of feedback. Your fear that the feedback model is so soft and so simple that it's doesn't have any teeth is proven false by the mountain of data we have about how people respond to negative feedback. Basically, people are so hungry for feedback, they'll do anything that you ask them to, partly because you have role power. Yeah, and look, for somebody who's got performance problems, most of the feedback you're going to be giving them is negative, but you also want to give them positive feedback from performance warrants. Otherwise, the perception will be, you haven't been giving me positive feedback when I did my job. Now all you're doing is giving me negative feedback. This negative feedback really isn't ethical because all you do is punish me when I do something bad. You don't reward me when I do something good. Okay, that was verbiage coming from an employee who feels they're failing and attacking their boss. Now look, part of this is for legal documentation. We as managers represent the company. To our directs, we are the company. If you don't know that, remember the podcast about professional subordination and also about there's no confidentiality between a manager and a direct. Actions we take that aren't of the highest managerial caliber create risk for the company. It may not be a lot of risk for us, but it is for the company. And no offense, in the legal world, the company has deep pockets. When one of your colleagues says, you can't fire anybody around here, it just means they screwed up. And it's one of the great examples of poppycock in modern industrial history. I've said it before, I'll say it again, guys. When one of your colleagues comes back from a meeting with HR and says, you can't fire anybody around here, all that proves is they got frustrated. They went to HR, says, I want to fire somebody. HR says, where's your documentation? And they said, I don't have it. And HR goes, look, sorry. And lawyers are involved and lawyers say no. And it's not because the person doesn't need to be fired. It's because of two things. The manager didn't do his or her job and the company doesn't want to pay a legal settlement because you didn't. But look, the larger part of firing slowly, if you will, not that we're suggesting that, is that it answers the ethical question, how would I want to be treated if I were in danger of losing my job because of performance issues? What that probably means that other than for an immediate termination, 6 months is about as fast as an effective manager would want to move to terminate somebody. And look, before we can terminate somebody, we have to establish to the satisfaction of a knowledgeable third party, it can't just be the manager. Otherwise, it could be arbitrary or emotional. It can't just be the direct. Sometimes they're recalcitrant about things. And usually that third party is HR and or their lawyers. Sorry. We have to be able to establish that we have taken reasonable and appropriate steps in light of the risk to the employee, but also to the company, if we fire them intemperately, to manage them into a sustainable position. If organizations go around hiring people and then don't make efforts to help people become sustainable, in all but the most unusual of organizations, that organization will begin to die. So again, typically this means plenty of feedback, leading to coaching. If you need a model for that, we have one. And then leading, unfortunately, to late-stage coaching. And one of our more famous podcasts is How to Fire Someone Well Almost, meaning the only reason you fire them is you engage in late-stage coaching and it doesn't work out. And then you have to do the second worst thing a manager has to do, which is fire someone. And the worst thing you can do is to not have done your job, to have somebody who needs to be fired because they and you didn't do your job and you don't do it. From an organizational perspective, the common vernacular is to put the direct on a performance improvement plan or a PIP. If you're a new manager and you've heard that PIP, that's what that is, a performance improvement plan. And it's basically HR's way of documenting that somebody is going to get fired. It's sad to say, frankly, that the only time most organizations really embrace the active manager behaviors that are involved in coaching someone to a higher level of performance is when they're really just assuming that they need the manager to gain lots of data about what the direct can't do so they can legally be indemnified in order to fire the person. It's sad, but it's true.
Yeah.
And look, guys, we already have a podcast about that. There's a real-world example, a drawn-out but exceptionally great late-stage coaching story called The Corky Story that we strongly encourage you to listen to. So all of that just shows that an effective manager won't fire fast because it's risky. It implicates them as much, if not more, than their direct. It's unfair, and it's unethical. It's just not the right thing to do.
Yeah. It's not convenient sometimes. If you want to get rid of somebody, it's not convenient, but it's not the right thing.
Oh, yeah. That's what we should wish for, Mike. We should wish for convenience.
Convenience. I want to start a new podcast called The Convenient Manager.
Yeah.
I come into work when I want.
Yeah.
I hire who I want. I fire them when I want.
I wear cargo shorts and flip-flops and t-shirts that clearly haven't been washed and the neck is kind of, you know, dangly. I talk about smoking pot on the weekends, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay. All right, so summarize for us before we drive people off.
Right. Guys, when you're an effective manager, you can hire quickly because you have a strong bench. You know people are out there. You're clear about what you want. Your process is standardized and you know what you're doing and you know how fast you can make it move. Everybody knows what to do. And they know how to make hiring decisions in an interview. Effective managers also know that terminating someone's employment is a serious affair. It's actually probably more serious than hiring. It's not as important, but it's more serious. Professionals only terminate after taking deliberate care and consideration.
Yeah, thank you, sir. I appreciate the podcast. It's interesting. This is an aside. So, folks, if you're looking for real value, just turn me off right now. But you know, we're often accused of two old white guys, right, talking about management.
Wow.
As if things have changed that radically, right? We're dinosaurs, and those same people sometimes accuse us of being incredibly harsh, right? But we're the folks that are saying, you can't fire people at will. There's ethics involved in how you treat people. It pains me sometimes, but I think sometimes they listen to one or two podcasts, they haven't listened to a lot of them, and they miss that about us, and it disappoints me greatly, I must say.
That's okay. You know what? We know there are people listening that have been listening for years. It really touched me recently. The podcast we just put out recently called The Tyranny of Unpublished Processes, and a longtime client and friend, whom you and I recently had dinner with, sent me a note, and within a day after the cast coming out. And the note was basically agreeing with us, and I actually put it into Things I Think for licensees last week. But what reminded me of how important what we do is and how seriously we take it is, this is a senior guy at a very well-known public company with hundreds of people working for him, and he listens to our cast right when they come out. This is not a manager or a supervisor or a senior manager or director or senior director. It's basically a very what amounts to a senior VP at any company in terms of budget and size and scope of people and so on. And he's listening every week. You know, he says, and I immediately demur from the idea that you guys are the reason I've gotten this far this fast. I said, well, it helps to be really smart and a really nice guy and care about people and to know your business and so on. And if we have recommendations that can help you, we're happy to do it. And the reason it's free is there's somebody struggling to be a manager somewhere in the world right now that can't afford a nickel for his or her managerial development. And it's important for us that you don't go through what we went through. We learned the hard way.
Yeah. And the great thing is it's not rocket science.
No.
If you have enough skill to find the podcast and listen to this, you are capable of being a great manager, right?
I mean, there's only one rocket scientist on our team, Kate, and we're not her, so.
Right, exactly. All right, my friend, I enjoyed it. Thank you.
My pleasure, partner.
All right, everyone, we'll see you next week.
So long.